I mentioned this, I think, every year that we talk about Parshas Tazria Mitzrayim, but I will mention it again because it's important to reiterate, and that is that, and we'll actually probably expand on this idea today, that Tzaras, again, commonly translated as leprosy, according to the vast majority of opinions, is not a standard kind of illness. It's not a regular textbook medical illness, which can be described and treated with regular standard medicines and treatment and so on. Rather, it is a physical manifestation of a spiritual ailment that occurs on the person. And the only way really to get rid of it is to go through the spiritual process of fixing up what has brought it on. Okay. Now, the Talmud talks about different spiritual shortcomings, which can bring on tzaras. The most famous of which, of course, is most of you, if not all of you, are familiar, is lashon hara, speaking negatively about other people. That's not going to be the focus of my discussion today, although there's a lot to say about lashon hara, namely, don't say lashon hara. You know the story of the tacky turned husband who came home one Shabbos after services, and the wife said, "So, what did the rabbi talk about today?" And the husband says, "He spoke about sin." And the wife says, "No, so what did he say about it?" So the husband says, "He was against it." Anyways, so lashon hara, we can boil it down to don't talk lashon hara. But obviously there are a lot of details. It's not our discussion today. The Talmud gives other sources for tzaras as well. For example, someone who is too cheap in terms of not giving charity or sharing with others, or being a little too possessive of his possessions, not just charity, but not lending things to other people when necessary and things like that. Someone who is a little too possessive of his possessions. So that is a negative trait which can incur tzaras. Someone who is haughty can incur tzaras. Talmud talks about other more severe things like murder and things like that. But, those aren't discussed a whole lot because hopefully most of us are not going around murdering people. But lashon hara is front and center, but like I said, there are other causes such as hubris, haughtiness, and so on, and things like that. So it's not, again, according to the vast majority of opinions, it's not a physical ailment, and based on that, it would not be leprosy. In fact, someone was saying yesterday that the way that it's described in the Torah really does not match the physical symptoms of leprosy. Furthermore, it appears on articles of clothing and on homes. And leprosy, the disease leprosy, does not show up on buildings or on garments, on articles of clothing. So it's very hard to say that it's leprosy either. So it's probably just translated as leprosy because it's described in the Torah as a skin ailment. But again, it seems to be a spiritual issue that is a manifestation of a spiritual shortcoming. What I want to talk about is the fact that today we don't really encounter tzaras in today's world. We don't encounter it. And in fact, there's a great deal of discussion among the halachic authorities. If in theory one were indeed to come down with some sort of skin disease, or for that matter, one's clothing were to come down with some sort of discoloration or some growth, or one's walls of one's home were to manifest the description of the Torah for these kinds of things, can one in theory be diagnosed by a Kohen with tzaras? And if indeed, would a person have to go through all the processes described in the Torah for that? And that's a whole lengthy discussion among the different halachic authorities about whether it's relevant today and whether one can indeed be diagnosed with it and whether one can be purified from it. There's a lot of steps in next week's parasha about how one is purified from it. You have to bring birds, you have to bring offerings, you have to shave your entire body. That poses a problem because normally you can't shave, a man cannot shave his peis, the corners of his head, or the corners of his beard with a razor. The beard cannot be used, a razor can't be used on the on certain parts of the beard. You cannot totally cut down the peis, the corners of the head, and so on. So it's only permitted in this case when one is fulfilling the mitzvah. Can one fully fulfill the mitzvah? How does one bring the sacrifices today? It's complicated, and we're not going to get into it beyond what I just mentioned. But it does raise the interesting question, and that is that why, indeed, does no one come down with this ailment today? seemingly, people, unfortunately, still speak Lashon Hara. People are still haughty. People are still guilty of being overly possessive of their possessions and not sharing with others. So why don't we see that this spiritual disease manifested today? So that is the question. I'll just share with you anecdotally. There's a doctor who davens in Edo. His name is Dr. Alex Jacobs. Some of you may know who he is. And he shares a story that a fellow once came to him with some sort of rash on his arm. And Dr. Jacobs is a Kohen, believe it or not. He's a Kohen. His son, Rabbi Avery Jacobs, is a rabbi in Kehilas Beis Yisrael, also on Denver's east side. So Dr. Jacobs shared that a fellow once came to him with a skin rash, and he examined it, and he said, you know, I'm sorry to tell you this, but, you know, I'm not only am I a doctor, but I'm also a Kohen. And looking at this rash, he said, I think you have to be careful, more careful with Shmiras Haloshin, which is a play on words. Shmiras Haloshon means guard your tongue. And he said, you have to be careful with Shmiras Haloshin, and that is you need to put the right lotions on your rash to make sure that you don't have this rash anymore. But he built it up very nicely, Dr. Jacobs did. And as he was telling the story, I was ready for him to say that he diagnosed the fellow with tsaras. But I'm not aware of anyone who has actually been diagnosed with it. And again, the question is why? Why doesn't it exist today? So the Ramban, Nachmanides, the great 13th century Spanish Torah authority, he says, he makes the following point. The Talmud says that tsaras on a home, on a house, only is relevant in the land of Israel, only in Eretz Yisrael. It does not apply outside of Eretz Yisrael. That's true only for tsaras of a house. Based on the wording of the verse says a home in the place of your achuza, of your holdings, of your heritage, meaning which refers to the land of Israel. And the Ramban says, why is that so? Why is it only the land of Israel? So says the Ramban, because God's presence is manifest in the land of Israel, not outside of it to the same degree. And he says that when God's presence is close, so that imbues a certain sanctity. And then when that sanctity moves away, if God moves away from a particular home, the result will be tzaras. The result will be this manifestation of this ailment that shows up on the walls of the home. The Ramban is sharing with us a very, very fundamental understanding of tzaras. And he's saying as follows, that there's a normal status quo, if you will, for the houses in the land of Israel, in Eretz Yisrael. And that status quo is one of sanctity. And that sanctity is brought on by the fact that Eretz Yisrael is the home of the Jewish people, not just because this land is mine, God gave this land to me, but it is the home of the Jewish people because God is present in the land of Israel. God's presence is there. The Torah makes clear that if the Jewish people don't observe the Torah properly, they will lose the land of Israel. They'll be chased out because the land does not tolerate sinfulness. The Torah says this a number of times, that the land of Israel does not tolerate sinfulness. And it says that if you don't follow the precepts of the Torah, the land will spit you out just as it spit out the Canaanite nations who lived such depraved, terrible lives. Okay. Unfortunately, this idea is lost on a lot of people today. And they just run around saying that God gave this land to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And they conveniently ignore the fact that God gave it to them to observe the Torah there properly. That's not my discussion today. Just thought I'd throw that in there. But what is our discussion is this idea that because the land of Israel has a unique sanctity, because God's presence is there in a much stronger sense than elsewhere in the world. So when a person is not living up to the spiritual level that he needs to, God's presence moves away from that home. And the result is this tsaras that presents itself upon the walls of the home. So it's basically a manifestation of a lack of enough kedusha, enough sanctity. Okay? And therefore, the tsaras shows up. So if you want to give an analogy, if you will, if a person, let us suppose, I'll just give an example of something I was listening to a podcast recently about sailors back in the day. So sailors were called limeys back in the day. Not now, back in the day. Why are they called limeys? Anybody? You got to unmute yourself, Ethel. That's
because of they needed to eat limes to.
They needed to eat limes. Yeah, Ethel was going to say those. I'm sorry, I don't read lips well. Okay, they need to eat limes or lemons or oranges or anything with vitamin C. And if they didn't get enough, I actually remember hearing this from a teacher when I was in high school. He pointed this out. And if they didn't, why? Because they needed vitamin C. If they didn't get enough vitamin C, they would get scurvy, which was also a popular insult in the pirate lingo. You know, they would say, yes, scurvy scum or something like that. And it's coming from that disease, shades of Tintin or something like that. So, because they didn't get vitamin C, and scurvy is a terrible disease. It's not a disease brought on by a bacterial infection or a virus or anything like that. It's a lack of what the body needs to function properly. A lack of vitamin C would then result in the body starting to break down, literally fall apart. If it wasn't treated, it was a terrible way to go. It would eventually kill the person. So it's not so much that a disease is imposed on the person. It's that when something is missing, it manifests itself through these symptoms. And we can give many examples that of ailments that a person can suffer from, which are not brought on by some, antigen or something like that coming into the body and causing problems, but rather it's just by the body lacking its basic needs, what it needs, and therefore not being able to function. And in a similar sense, a home in the land of Israel that is used to having a certain level of sanctity, okay, a spiritual presence, and that spiritual level is not met, it will result in manifesting a spiritual shortcoming through this tsaras. Okay, that is the idea that the Ramban lays down. So based on that idea, we have now a broader perspective on what tsaras is. Tsaras is not some external disease being imposed on the person. Rather, it is an expression. We can now take this idea that the Ramban says for the houses and apply it to people and to clothing as well. Tsaras, when a person shows up with tsaras, it is not not some external force imposing itself on the person. Rather, it is a reflection that the person himself or herself is lacking something. And because of that lack, the body shows up and the body is going to manifest symptoms of tsaras because of that lack of the proper connection and spiritual sanctity and so on and so forth. Okay? That is the idea behind tsaras. Now, any questions or comments before I go on? Okay, so let's take this idea now a step further. So now that we understand that.
I have a comment.
Yes, go ahead.
I have a comment. So I did hear about a young boy who did have a diagnosis of tsaras a number of years ago. Something about he was talking with a great rabbi on an airplane. It turned out he actually did have that.
Okay, that's very interesting. I can't comment on that, but it's possible. You know, it's possible. And like I said, the comment, you know, there are halachic authorities who talk about that possibility. So I can't comment on that. I can just comment that it certainly is not prevalent. That's for sure. It certainly is not prevalent. Yeah.
What about having not tsaras, but a reaction on the body that you spoke Lashon Hara and something reacts in the body? Still called tsaras, even though
I wouldn't
not
call it tsaras. I wouldn't call it tsaras per se. I do wonder, as we're talking, if the skin ailment psoriasis is derived from the term tsaras. I've never looked into that. But I don't think that in general we say that, you know, a person will have some sort of direct and immediate reaction. Maybe I'm going to try to take this idea further. Maybe, you know, we can discuss that further with what I'm about to introduce over here.
Okay.
So the following story is related. I don't recall where the story is related, but the following story is related, I don't remember exactly where the story comes out, but the story goes as follows, that there was a period of drought at some point in a community, and the rabbi the rabbi of the community declared a fast and penance and so on for the community. And the rabbi made a declaration to God, something to the effect that, in my merit, if I am not worthy on my behalf, if my merit is not enough to bring rain down, so then let my hand wither. And upon making this declaration, it began to rain. And fast forward a few decades, this rabbi's son now is the rabbi of the community. And again, similar situation. There's a drought and people don't have water, and there's no grain growing and so on. And again, the rabbi now, the second generation, he declares a fast, a day of penance. And again, the rain is not coming. And he makes a similar declaration. And he says, if I'm not meritorious enough, let my hand wither. And lo and behold, his hand withers. And so that was taken as a sign that the son was not on the same spiritual level as the father, that when he made this declaration, indeed his hand withered. Okay. I don't know what the end of the story was over there, but again, fast forward another bunch of decades. And now we have a third generation. The grandson of the original rabbi, the son of the middle fellow, is now the rabbi of the community. And again, similar situation. There's a drought and they all gather in the synagogue and they all pray and they engage in repentance and acts of penance and charity and so on. And again, the rabbi gets up and says, if I am not meritorious enough, let my hand wither. And nothing happens. His hand does not wither, but it doesn't rain either. Okay. What is the upshot? What's the point of this story? The point is that the middle generation rabbi had been meritorious enough that heaven responded to his declaration, right? And heaven responded, you're not on the level of your father, and rain does not come, so your hand, but you will suffer the consequences of your declaration. The third generation was even on a lower level, such that heaven didn't even respond to his declaration at all. He wasn't on that level. People get up and, make these kinds of declarations all the time. If eating a ham sandwich is so terrible, how come I don't drop dead the second I eat the ham sandwich? Right? People ask this question all the time. Well, who says God has nothing better to do than to take care of little you and the ham sandwich you're eating? Right? Whereas in past generations, perhaps a very righteous person, we find in last week's parsha, we talked about that Aaron's two sons, Nadav and Avihu, walked into the tabernacle, brought an unauthorized offering. They died on the spot, right? Today, people traipse all over the Temple Mount area and nothing happens to them at all. And God help us if any Israelis dare walk in there. Of course, Israelis shouldn't be walking in there because you know how to walk in there because we are impure. But what's the idea? And this is discussed. We mourn about this reality on Tisha B'Av. We say, that on the Temple Mount where only fools would dare to tread, areas where no one was allowed to walk in, foxes now roam and nothing happens to them. They just roam there freely. That's what we say on Tisha B'Av. It's a verse in Echa, that on Mount Zion, which is desolate, Shu'al and Hilchubo, foxes now roam. Okay. What's the idea? The idea is that the spiritual level has descended so steeply that nothing happens now. That's not to say there's no spiritual power there, but it is certainly much, much less than it was before. And as I just illustrated in this story with these three generations of rabbis, that the spiritual descent was such that by the time the third generation arrived, not only did it not rain, but he didn't suffer any consequences for his declaration because he simply wasn't on the level to get an instantaneous reply from heaven. Okay. And this is a reality that today we have to deal with, that generation to generation, as we move farther and farther away from Mount Sinai, from the greats of earlier generations, we have an idea called Niskatnu Hadoiris. That means that every succeeding generation, in a certain sense, becomes spiritually smaller and smaller. Okay. And because of that, we don't even have, we lose that spiritual sensitivity. And as time goes on, our spiritual sensitivity becomes less and less. Every succeeding generation as a whole, I'm not to say there aren't individuals who rise above it. But as a whole, in a general sense, the spiritual power of a generation tends to become smaller and smaller, tends to become less and less. And that explains why today, again, in general, I'm not saying it's not possible for a person to, it seems like it is possible for a person to indeed be diagnosed with tzaraas, but in general, it doesn't happen today. You don't hear about people being diagnosed with it, really, by and large, is because it's predicated on that something's missing from what is supposed to be, from the norm, right? So just to give an example, I'm not familiar with a one-cell parasitic organism that died from scurvy. Why? Because not that I've done a poll to check, but the idea is because it's a much simpler life form. It's much less advanced, and therefore it doesn't require that in the first place. So if it's missing it, it's okay. It needs much less to get by, right? So by the same token over here, whereas once upon a time, people, as we said with the house in the land of Israel, let's talk about the house outside the land of Israel. The house outside the land of Israel certainly does not have that connection to spirituality that the house in the land of Israel does. So let us make what we call a kal v'chomer, what they call in legalese a fortiori. Okay, a kal v'chomer means as follows. If a house in the land of Israel, which is spiritually deficient and loses that usual connection to godliness, now comes down with this tzaraas ailment, so then certainly a house outside the land of Israel, any house outside the land of Israel, ought to manifest this tzaraas disease, because none of the houses have that connection, right? The answer is that's true, but none of the houses started off with that connection in the first place. The houses outside the land of Israel are not vessels that can contain that sanctity. They're not missing anything because they didn't start off at that level. The house in the land of Israel normally exists on a higher plane of spiritual connection. When it's missing that, it manifests tzaraas. A house outside the land of Israel never starts in the first place. It never had that level of spiritual connection to say, oh, now it's missing something, and therefore it will come down with this ailment. It was never there in the first place. Okay, people who are, God forbid, extremely ill, at a certain point, they may get to a point where they don't feel pain anymore, because the body is just so beyond that they just don't feel the pain. So they might fool themselves into thinking that they're recovering. Oh, this is great. I don't feel pain anymore. No, the opposite is true. The body is so broken down that it doesn't even feel the pain anymore, that it's of the ailment. It's just broken down to such an extent that it doesn't even feel the ailment. The person who, God forbid, is caught out in the freezing cold and has gone to a point of hypothermia, where, towards, as the person is getting close to death because of it, the person will start to feel warm at a certain point. This is a well-documented reality. The person will say, oh, everything's great. Everything's fine. I feel warm. I feel fine. That's because the body just starts to shut down and he doesn't even feel the cold anymore. So it's not that things are better. Things are worse. Okay. And so we are subjected today. We don't generally have tzaraas because I hate to say it, but we are not on that level of the Jewish people living in temple times to even be able to experience the shortcomings. Those spiritual shortcomings are not even present because we're just not on that level to even have a manifestation of tzaraas in the first place. We're too far away from it. Okay, Ethel, go ahead, and then Mrs. Elias, I'll take your question after Ethel. Go ahead.
Okay, you have a mezuzah in the house.
Yep.
Or several. Does that apply to the house or to the person?
The mezuzah is actually meant for the house. It's meant for the home. But it's meant to, imbue sanctity upon the home and upon those who are living in the home, right? It's not unusual that if a person or a family is going through a string of problems one after the other, they'll go to the rabbi and the rabbi will say, check your mezuzahs, right? And sometimes the rabbi will say, check yourself, but sometimes they'll say, check your mezuzahs, because the mezuzahs provide protection for the home and those and the inhabitants of the home. Okay. To be clear, I'm not saying that a Jewish home does not have sanctity. Okay. It certainly does. It certainly does. And the mezuzah is the idea of imbuing sanctity in the home. However, it's certainly clear that a home in the land of Israel is on a much higher spiritual level than a home outside the land of Israel. Okay. Yeah. Mrs. Elias, go ahead.
Okay. I've got three questions, or one's a comment. The mezuzah, I was going to mention that also. Mm-hmm. I am missing many mezuzahs, and they're somewhere in the house. We think they had been taken out to be checked, and I can't find them. And I've only got a couple of doors that have the mezuzahs on them. And I'm curious, how does that affect my house? And the other thing is, I think I have a ghost who lives in the attic. I mean it. And is there any kind of way to get rid of, is there a Jewish way to get rid of a ghost in the attic?
Okay.
My third thing is that I just wanted to say that, wait a minute. Okay, Google, thank you. Okay, Google. Take my medicine.
Just doing my job.
Thank you. Okay. Let's see.
Artificial intelligence. Gotta love it. Yeah, go ahead.
Unbelievable. Okay. So what was I saying about Israel?
Yes.
I was looking for an apartment to rent, and I cannot remember what city I was in, but it was not Jerusalem. It was a small city. And I saw this adorable little apartment, but the person who had lived there and the person before him and the person before him, so they said, might have been in Sfat, but I don't know for sure, had a nervous breakdown. He thought he was the Messiah. He was an American young man, and he got the Messiah complex that they get in Israel.
That tends to happen around Jerusalem more than Sfat, but go ahead.
Really? Well, anyhow, his parents had to come to Israel to get him. He had a total nervous breakdown. And apparently the person before him who lived there had the same problem. Person before him, or her, or whatever, had a, so they said. I don't know how much is true, but I do know that that particular one, the last one for sure, really happened, because everybody said to me, oh no, you don't want to go. You don't want to take that apartment. As cute as it might be, you do not want to take that apartment. And I was a woman living alone. It was also difficult to get to, and you had to go through a dark area behind the streets to get to the door. It was like it was built into a cave. It was really weird.
So you want
to, well, how would that be related to?
Okay. Just to answer your questions briefly, as far as the mezuzah goes, certainly the main entrance to the home, you want to make sure you have a mezuzah. That is the primary obligation. Other doors in the home should have a mezuzah as well. But the primary Torah level obligation is on the main entrance. So you want to make sure you have a kosher mezuzah on the main entrance, and you should also have mezuzahs on the other doorways in the home. You know, if they're around, I guess you want to try to track them down. If that's possible, someone can track them down for you. You know, mezuzahs are they're not cheap. You know, they're not, it's not like you just go to a store and pay 10 bucks. They have to be written properly. They have to be handwritten with a lot of laws and conditions and so on. But for sure, your front door, you want to have a mezuzah. That is the main obligation. Okay. That's and as far as that goes.
Every 7 years, you have to have them checked.
They're supposed to be checked twice every 7 years.
Twice every 7 years.
Yes, especially if they're exposed to the elements, which very often a front door mezuzah is, and therefore there's more grounds for it to get ruined or warped. They actually sell cases that are weather, you know, waterproof and so on. And if you have a front door mezuzah, some of them are, like you said, are very cute and nice and so on, but they're not weatherproof, and the mezuzah can quickly get ruined. So save the cute ones for inside and get the weatherproof ones for outside. As far as ghosts and things like that, I can't comment a whole lot on it, except to say that there is an idea of ghosts, not in the concept of Ghostbusters or Casper the Friendly One or anything like that. They don't, you know, I've never encountered one. There actually, the Talmud talks about people who had already passed away who would return to their homes on Friday night to make Kiddush. The Talmud talks about Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, the author of the Mishnah, and says he would come home Friday night after he died and make Kiddush for his family. It needs a lot of explanation. There's a lot of talk about what it means. It's certainly not meant to be like the stuff of, you know, dime novels, you know, of like, oh, there's a ghost from the great rabbi coming back to haunt us. You know, it's not what it means. That said, the idea of there being a spiritual presence in a home and so on certainly exists. One of the reasons a shiva should preferably be held in the home where the person passed away, or at least where the person lived, is for that reason. The spirit of the person is connected. There's an idea of the spirit being connected to the gravesite, which is why people pray by gravesites. There's a connection of the spirit of that person, the soul of that person. So there certainly is that idea. That said, it's way above my pay grade. A lot of things are above my pay grade to venture opinions about whether or not you have a ghost in your attic. It might just be a squirrel or a bat.
Which they
might be as hard to get rid of as the ghost. I don't know. But, you know, if you're hearing pitter patter in your attic, it might be a critter, not a ghost running around up there. You might want to get an exterminator, not an exorcist, to have a look. So that's like a comment on that as far as that goes. As far as, you know, like a house having a bad, you know, bad luck or something like that on it, and people, you know, bad things happening there. Again, the idea is possible. But again, you know, to get into specifics, it's above my pay grade. You've got to talk to people who are more involved in this stuff. That said, in the world of Kabbalah and these kinds of things, there are a lot of charlatans out there. So not every guy who hangs out a shingle that says, I'm a Kabbalist, you know, is necessarily someone you want to talk to. Very often, the shingle that they should be hanging out is more like, I'm a con man, trying to get, you know, to part you and your money from each other. So you do have to be careful and make sure you're talking to someone who is actually, you know, knows what he's talking about and doing, and not just someone trying to make a few bucks off of you. Okay. So that's, you know, all I have to say about those issues. Okay.
Okay. Why is phone never rings except when I'm talking on a Zoom.
All right. I want to move on if you don't mind. So I'm going to move on here. And getting back to our discussion over here. Bye. So, I'm just going to mute everyone once again. Okay. So getting back to our conversation. So, we understand now at this point that, you have to be on a certain spiritual level to even merit tzara'as. In a certain sense, tzara'as indicates that it's actually, in a certain sense, a positive sign. It shows that the spiritual functioning of the person is in good order. That in the sense that when something is awry, when something in the spiritual structure, in the spiritual functioning of the individual is not working properly, so you get a message. It shows up and tells you there's a problem over here, right? As opposed to getting no message whatsoever, having no symptoms whatsoever, is not indicative that there's no problem. It is indicative that the whole system's not working, and therefore you're not getting that warning sign in the first place. Okay, and that is largely why we don't really experience tzara'as in today's day and age, because we don't really merit to be on that level to even get that warning sign in the first place. Okay, now I'm not here to depress everyone, and you know everyone's like, oh, so we're just a bunch of nothings and we can't accomplish anything and so on. I want to talk about that for a few minutes as well to stress the flip side. Okay, because again, yes, it's true. We are on a relatively low spiritual level in today's day and age compared to previous generations. There's no question about that. And historically, if you look, I mean, the Talmud already says, the Talmud says that if we look at the Talmud, the sages of the Talmud speaking about themselves commented and said that if we view earlier generations as angels, then we are men. We are human, okay? But if we view the earlier generations as human, then we are donkeys, okay? A donkey is a particularly vicious insult to call a person a donkey. In Hebrew, if you really, really want to insult someone and really knock them down, you say, atachamor, you are a donkey. That's a very strong insult. And the reason is because the word chamor is cognate with the word chomer. Chomer means materialistic. Or just like earth. In other words, you are a chamor, a donkey represents the purely materialistic side without the spiritual side of existence. So it's a very strong insult. And spiritually, the idea is you often find great people, the Torah describes them as riding on a chamar. That means that they had conquered, they dominated, they overcame their lower self. That is the idea behind it. So what the Talmud is saying is, if we view the earlier generations as angels, meaning what's an angel? An angel is a purely spiritual being. Angel has no physical body. Yes, I know they're described as being having wings and whatnot, but that's a spiritual description. They don't have physical bodies. It's a spiritual description of what they are. And when one beheld an angel, one was beholding a spiritual entity. Then we are human, meaning we are comprised of body and soul. If we view them as human, then we're a step down. We are purely physical, materialistic beings. That's not to say we don't have a soul, but it means that in terms of what our focus is, what our main primary existence is, we are purely materialistic with very little connection to our spiritual side. Okay. And again, the idea is that the further away we get, the more we move away from Mount Sinai and from that experience of the Jewish people connecting directly to God, having that prophecy straight from God as a nation, the further away we get, the less connected we are, the less spiritual we become, and the more physical we become. There's a great story about Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky was one of the major Torah leaders of the latter half of the 20th century, passed away in 1986. And the story is told that he was once on an airplane, and he had children or grandchildren on the flight as well. I don't recall exactly if it was children or grandchildren. And throughout the flight, they kept coming over to check on him, make sure he was okay, he was taken care of. This was back in the days when flights were more chilled, when, you know, they weren't jumping all over you and kicking you out the window in mid-flight because, you know, you dared to lower your mask to, catch a breath before you asphyxiated. So anyways, so his seatmate, he struck up a conversation with his seatmate, and the seatmate was apparently an atheistic individual. I don't know if he was Jewish or not Jewish, but, you know, someone who didn't really believe in God, and they were schmoozing and so on. And at one point, this seatmate, noting that how much his children or grandchildren were caring for him and checking up on him, he commented and he said, "You know, it's really nice to see how well your grandchildren take care of you and check up on you and make sure you're okay. You know, in my world, it's quite the opposite. You know, my children and my grandchildren don't really have very, very much respect for me. I mean, to me, the very term 'my old man' is just an absolutely terrible, absolutely horrible way of referring to a parent. I think it's just totally, completely disrespectful, a way to refer to a parent." Okay. But this fellow said, he said, "Why is that? That you, your children, grandchildren show you so much respect, but they don't show me the slightest amount of respect." And by the way, this is very much true in society at large today. I'm not saying all segments, but certainly there is this prevailing attitude, of treating one's elders, with less respect, calling them boomer and things like that, and so on, instead of with more respect. There was an incident a few years ago in the New Zealand Parliament, I think it was, where a younger member was going on about climate change and these kinds of issues, and an older member of Parliament tried to cut in or raise an objection and said something, and the younger member said something like, "Okay, boomer," which is apparently a pejorative way of referring to baby boomers. And it made headlines because of the disrespect shown and the realities of how the younger generation doesn't really respect the older generation. And they view them as just being out of touch and so on. Anyways, getting back to the story. So Rabbi Kamenetsky responded. He said, "It's very simple." He said, "I'll explain it to you." He said, "My children and my grandchildren view me as being a link in the connection generations back to the Jews who stood at Sinai. Every generation that is closer is thus more connected to the Sinai experience and is thus on a higher spiritual level. So the farther back you go, the more connected, the closer you are to that revelation and that connection directly to God. So of course they show me respect because they understand that I am a generation or two generations closer to the greatest achievement in a certain sense that mankind has ever reached of God speaking directly to them as a nation." He says, "You, on the other hand, believe that you evolved from monkeys, right? or amoebas if you go back a few generations more. So every generation further back, you are one generation closer to the apes in the jungle or to single-celled amoebas or whatever it is. So of course they don't show you respect. Every generation they move away, they have progressed further. And every generation further back, they have progressed less. So that is, you know, some thoughts about where we are today. Having said that, going back to the question, so why don't we all walk around depressed and morose and say, okay, so we know we're just hopeless. So this question is raised by many thinkers and commentators, and they ask the question as follows. They say, look, we're all waiting for the Messiah to arrive and the Messianic era to begin. We need to merit that. We need to merit that. We need to live on a level that God's presence can be manifest. So the question is, if earlier generations who were so much more righteous and so much more spiritually connected couldn't make that happen, how do we expect us, our lowly generation, to bring the Messiah? That is the question that was posed to a lot of rabbis, and there are a lot of different answers. I'll share with you two answers, one of which, well, both of which are empowering, but one of which should be very empowering. The first answer, which is commonly stated, is that we are standing on the shoulders of the earlier generations. In other words, it is cumulative. It's not that each generation starts again trying to bring the Messiah, but rather each generation adds another layer towards bringing the world to wherever it needs to get to usher in the Messianic era. And so we are standing on the shoulders of earlier generations. Okay, that is, and therefore we may be small, but we are standing on the shoulders of giants who walked this earth before us. And so we can get over the top. Okay, and the parable is given. There's even a song about it. If you want to Google it, I think it's called "Giant Shoulders" is the name of the song. The parable is of a man and his son who wanted to go see the king. And when the king was coming out into their city, when they got there, there was a huge throng of people, and there was a wall in between them and where the king was. So the father said to the son, "The wall is too high. I can't see over the wall." So the son said to the father, "Father, put me on your shoulders and then I'll be able to look over the wall and I will describe to you what's going on. So even though you won't be able to see it, I'll be able to see it through standing on your shoulders and I'll tell you what's going on. And that way you'll have a connection and I'll have a connection to it." So the son himself really doesn't on his own see over the top of the wall, but by standing on his father's shoulders, he's able to see over the top of the wall. That's one idea. It is empowering in the sense that we continue to build. But the other approach is the following idea, and that is this. That is that we have an idea in Judaism, lefun tsara agra. That means in accordance to the effort required, according to the stress and the effort and the exertion that one puts in, is the reward. In other words, it's very easy for me to come to God and say, "God, I get a lot of reward for my life. I didn't murder anyone my whole life." Okay? So God says, "That's very kind of you and very fine. But tell me, do you have inclinations towards murdering people?" Most of the time, not. Okay. So, there are a few exceptions. So God says, "Well, then you don't get much reward because you didn't put in much effort. If I say I kept my mouth shut when I really wanted to say something, not nice or lashon hara or whatever, that's where you get the reward because that's hard." So we have an idea, lefum tzara agra, that according to the work that one puts in, so then one gets a reward accordingly. This is one aspect to the idea that Talmud says that in the place where a bal tshuva, where a person who has repented stands, even a completely righteous person does not stand, because the bal tshuva has to overcome his baser inclinations that he struggled with. And so in that sense, he is in a way greater than the person who has never sinned. So part of the reality of diminishing spiritual level of generations is that we also live in a world where the world around us is less spiritually connected. Okay. Yes, society has advanced and progressed in certain ways, but the fact of the matter is that in terms of focus on spirituality in today's world, very minimal focus on spiritual connection. You go back a couple centuries, life wasn't easy. I'm not saying that, but part and parcel of life was religion, was spiritual connection. That was part and parcel of life. Today, for the vast majority of the world, for, of the Western world, religion is this nice thing that we celebrate, you know, when we buy gifts once a year for our family, and maybe say a couple blessings. But it's, you know, it's a distant second to the pursuit of happiness and of whatever we want today and of the latest iPhone or whatever it may be. And we live in that world. That's the world that we live in. So connecting to spirituality is more challenging than ever. And so, yes, we are very spiritually small, but our struggles are so much greater. And so the one who struggles and overcomes and makes even small steps to overcome those struggles and to connect, even in a small way, that is enormously valuable in the eyes of God, because it's so difficult. And it's precisely because it's so difficult that it has so much value. Okay? So you're right. We may live in a generation today where we don't have the merit of having tzaras. We don't get those messages because we're not on that spiritual level. But at the same time, because we are so distant from true spiritual connection and true spiritual living and true religious life as it's meant to be, any triumph that we have is enormously valuable. And that should be an encouragement for anyone, anywhere, wherever you're at, to keep fighting that fight. As they say, keep fighting the good fight. Because though we may stumble a lot and fall and fail, but at the same time, any triumph is very valuable because it's so difficult. Okay, so those are some thoughts based on this week's parasha. It's late. I'm overrunning my time. But if you want to go ahead, you have to unmute yourself. Ms. Elias, if you have a final comment or question, go ahead.
No, never mind. I forgot what it was. But
okay.
I do want to just say that I know that there are no animals there. And what I hear up in the attic, it's like someone is walking heavy, heavy steps. And it could be the settling in the house, because my neighbor adjoining me, because we're townhouses, he hears the same thing. He said, this house is going to fall down in 25 years if that's settling. And it's really, I know there's nothing up there, and it only happens in the night. It's really weird. Only when I'm in bed and in the night, and you hear it, like it's like a soft-footed slipper walking with a heavy foot, and it's really weird. And I mean, yes. is there an exorcism in Judaism?
There is maybe, but again, it's way beyond my pay grade. I can't comment on it. So all I can tell you is I wish you the best of luck, but I can't comment beyond that.
I've also got a lot of medical problems, so I don't know.
I can't comment on that either.
Want to ask you, if a person's breaking the law, wouldn't they see the sarat on the walls if you're getting something?
It is a public pronouncement of one's spiritual shortcoming, absolutely.
I have no spots on my wall
that's good. At least that you don't have.
Yeah, but it's all me. I've got a lot of pain.
If you come to my house, my kids have left many spots on the walls.
I'm sure.
Okay. Anyone else before we close?
Thank you.
Okay, so we'll leave it at that.